This is Roger Bennett, and this is Men in Blazers on Ice, presented by Jägermeister, the podcast version of a series we started last year, in which we took our love of hockey to the next level by sitting down with some of the most intriguing stars in the NHL and learning about their career journeys and the lessons of life they've gleaned along the way. Lessons that most often transcend sports. Last season, we created digital films with the likes of Austin Matthews, Ryan O'Reilly, Big Vic Hedman, and the magical Kevin Hayes. The conversations were so rich, we wanted to offer them in a longer format, on a podcast, so they could really have air and be savoured to their full extent. So we're filming again with the likes of young Finnish speed king Sebastian Aho, Calgary's impudent wonder Matthew Tkachuk, and the truly singular back-to-back Stanley Cup winner, Mr. Pat Maroon. But first up, a remarkable conversation with Ryan Reeves of the Vegas Golden Knights. That human reckoning who, to me, has long been one of the most fascinating and boisterous stories in the NHL. Two quick things before we dive in. If you're listening to this, please, please, please subscribe, rate, review, and share it with your friends. I mean this, these are not just words. I know you glaze over when you hear them, but that simple set of actions helps us do more. Men in Blazers on Ice is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever podcasts are distributed, including NHL.com and the NHL app. Second, we are so grateful to Jägermeister for this partnership. We really are. That partnership makes this happen. Thank you to the official shot of the NHL. To me, Jägermeister, it's just a bolt of human emotion in a shot glass. I raise one to you as we begin this pod, a pretty stunning video version of which, filled with hits, chirps, and a blown kiss or two, can be found on NHL.com and Men in Blazers social right now. I actually love it. Enough of that, though. To the pod, here is Ryan Reeves. My guest today is a human reckoning. A man who lives to finish checks along the boards, a relentless agitator, elite trash talker, lover, fighter, but also a man who's evolved as the NHL has, and in so doing, has become one of the league's best and most boisterous stories. It's a joy to welcome from your Golden Knights, Mr. Ryan Reeves.
Raj, how you doing?
Ryan, you were born in the great city of Winnipeg. Your dad, Willard, was an all-star running back in the Canadian Football League. Go Blue Bombers.
Go Rough Riders now. My brother plays for the Rough Riders, so we're done with the Bombers.
Let me take that back. Go Rough Riders.
There you go.
Stand corrected. Is it true that as a kid, you were better at football than hockey?
Me and my brother both dominated football, and then he was really good at basketball. I was good at hockey, but I would say I was maybe a little bit better at football. I was just much bigger than everybody. I get my growth spurt early. My dad taught me at an early age to run through people. I was just running over people until I quit football, basically.
I'm still waiting for my growth spurt, Ryan. When it comes, I too will be unstoppable. Fate, though, stepped in and sent you off onto a hockey-playing trajectory. You injured yourself skating back to the bench after the handshake line at a hockey tournament tore out your knee joint. It was a complete fluke, but it changed your choice of sports, right?
I had a really good game, a couple points. We were just shaking hands, and all of a sudden, my left knee locked, and I was laying on the ice while the Zamboni was out there. That was the very end of the hockey season, very beginning of the football season. It was basically perfect timing for me missing the whole football season and being able to rehab. I think my first time on the ice the next season was the first day of training camp. So it literally worked out just perfectly to make it back for hockey.
You began to take your hockey more seriously, playing for junior hockey's Brandon Wheat Kings. And as you started to train harder, your mum stepped in to take your game to the next level. Can you tell us what she did? The pork chops.
The pork chops. I don't know what it was. I think I was just a growing boy. And so back in the day, when my mom would drive down, she would either bring me three pork chops with applesauce, or my billets that I lived with, they would give me three pork chops with applesauce or three burgers. And I would eat two of them right before warmups and one after the first period. I don't know how I did puke all over the ice one game, but I did that for my full three-year career in Brandon. Once I got into the AHL, that was just a wrap. There was no more of that. I got chirped all day.
It's that she knew you'd want a third one so that you could keep flying around the ice.
I worked the first two off after the first period, so I needed that third one after the first.
Shout out to Mom's Pork Chops, the true breakfast of champions.
Yeah.
But part of your story that's formative but excruciating, the number of your friends coming through who didn't make it, among them Phil Hayer, a close friend who was innocently caught up in the crossfire of a gang shootout in Winnipeg's West End, Travis Price, who passed after suffering a heart attack playing hockey age 16.
Bruce Oak was one of my really good friends. He passed away of an overdose at the very end of my first season in the NHL.
Ryan, losing close friends tragically at such early ages, it can shake a human being. How did it affect you?
When you're that young, you don't expect to lose a friend like that, let alone three very, very close friends. And it hurt. I remember when it happened to Phil right at trade deadline. Krim called me into the office and I thought I got traded. So I'm sitting there in the office and all of a sudden my mom walks in. I was like, what the hell are you doing here? And she said, Phil got shot. He's dead. And we didn't have a practice that day. And I could have sat there and cried on her shoulder, but I put on my equipment. I just skated an hour and a half just by myself to clear my head. It would hurt a lot more just sitting there crying for a couple hours. So that took a little bit of the weight off the shoulders. And then a day or two later, I drove right down for the funeral. I think right after the funeral, I hopped in my car. I drove right back and we had a game that night. And I think that game helped me kind of forget about what happened because, you know, that was a hard drive down there and it was an even tougher drive back seeing all my friends and how wrecked they were. I think hockey, sports in general for anybody, is a very nice release from things that you don't want to think about.
You have their names, Philly Blunts for Phil Hayer, T-Bone for Travis, along with that of Bruce Oak tattooed onto your left arm. You turn that grief into grit and motivation, traits that grabbed the attention of the St. Louis Blues in the 2005 draft. They'd identified your potential as what they called an energy player. And in an early interview, you were asked to define your role and you said, my job is to hit everything I can, crash and bang. Does that pretty much describe it, Ryan?
It did, especially back then when I was in junior. I played a lot on the second line and it was a lot of, I'd go run a couple guys and those top scorers would go grab the puck and go do their thing. And so when I came into the AHL my first year, I still hit, I still ran around and played that physical game, but I didn't really have that edge to me. And I remember I got sat down by Davis Payne, one of the assistant coaches down there. He said, if you want to make the NHL, you're going to have to start sticking up for yourself, sticking up for teammates, drawing some energy. That was one of the most important meetings in my career because the things he told me really stuck to me. So I went back home that summer and I took boxing lessons. And that next season, that's how I got recognized. And 2 years later, I was in the NHL and never went back.
You came into the league as an intimidator, a threat, a protector, a punisher, a man every star player would want to have in their foxhole.
I got no problem laying my body on the line, eating a couple punches, you know, whatever I have to do for the better of the team, for sure.
One hit that stays etched in my cortex, 2017, game three of the playoffs against Minnesota. You notice Wild defenseman Nate Prosser with his head down as he challenges for the puck. Ryan, your eyes light up. Tell me, what goes through your mind when you see that?
There's some places on the ice where I just really like catching guys. D-men wheeling around the net is always a dangerous spot because going around the net, sometimes they're fumbling with the puck and I can meet them on the other side. There's just some places on the ice that are dangerous when I'm on the ice. So you got to be aware. I can't exactly remember the hit from Prosser because I'll be honest, I've caught Prosser a couple times in my career and I've let him know.
Prosser is 6'2". He's a solid unit. You essentially bench press him into the board. I mean, it's like watching Hunter and Prey.
I'm not a small kid either, though. I'm 225 pounds. I got some weight behind these bones. He's a big boy, but he's a little scrawnier than I am. I'm built more like a football player.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the hits you deliver, they're not too far off from the football career that might have awaited you if you had followed in your dad's footsteps.
A lot of guys hit really sideways, and I tend to hit straight on. I kind of bend my knees. I follow through with my hands a lot. And so I always said I am kind of like a linebacker on the ice. Even though I played running back, I used to hit pretty hard as a running back too back in the day.
When you deliver hits like that, the venue goes wild. At home, delirium. On the road, you leave an arena seething with anger. You once said, you love those moments.
In Vegas, it's been unbelievable because it got to the point where I was running guys and you could hear the whole crowd chanting Reeves. It fires me up even more. And I love playing in Vegas because of that. On the road, it's even more fun because you either get booed or the fans start screaming or you're like, oh, what's going on? But I don't take that many penalties with my hits. So they're usually pretty clean, but they're hard. Yeah, I definitely like the ones on the road a little bit more. I think those are a little more fun.
You once said, if their fans hate me, then their players hate me twice as much. And if I'm getting under their skin enough that even their fans are noticing it, then I'm doing my job. Is that it? Reveling almost in being the NHL supervillain, right?
If other teams like playing against me, then I'm not doing my job and I shouldn't be in this league. I don't go on the ice to make friends. I don't go on the ice to pretend like I'm a 50-goal scorer. I go on the ice to make the other team's life miserable. And if players on the other team hate me and fans hate me and they're chirping me on Twitter, I've done my job.
Your chirping game is also an essential club in your golf bag. The players rated you third best in the league.
Should have been first, but okay, continue.
There's an art to trash talking. And you once said you consider yourself Picasso. What is the secret to a good chirp?
Making it off the cuff. When you try and remember chirps, it's not as funny.
I love that you make it sound like you write chirps before the game.
Can we swear on here? I don't know. Probably not, hey?
You do whatever you want.
You can beep it out, right? Here's the thing. Yeah. You know you're under a guy's skin when you chirp him and all he says is, oh, f*** you, because he has nothing to say. And that's what I feel like a lot of guys have been saying to me lately. You usually hit him pretty deep and you can tell when you cut him. Oh, whatever, man, you suck at hockey. He's like, yeah, okay. I've heard that 100 times. Like, I don't care what you say. Like, that's fine.
But in your mind, a good chirp, it's like self-awareness, speed of thought, and fearlessness. Would you say those are the ingredients?
That's a good recipe right there.
And on the rare occasion that you run out of words, you just drop a chicken sound or two from the bench.
That is true. Yeah, my sound effects. What's that show that guy used to make all those sound effects? That really old one.
Police Academy.
Police Academy. There you go. I fancy myself a little bit of that guy.
When they make Police Academy 27, Ryan Reeves, get your
agent.
There
you go. Yeah, all right. New acting job.
The persona that you create in-game, it does set you apart. There are few athletes who spend more of their time on the field or on the ice smiling.
I get paid a good amount of money to piss people off, to run around and make people scared on the ice. And it's the best job in the world. My whole life, I dreamed of being an athlete, whatever it was, a football player, a hockey player. Here I am. You know, people have told me I'd never make the NHL. This is my 11th year. And what do I got to be mad about? I'm skating around making people's lives miserable. I'm having the time of my life. I have no reason not to smile. If somebody chirps me, I just laugh at them. That gets under people's skin more when you just laugh in their face than if you get mad. I just don't understand why everybody doesn't do that. If somebody gets mad when I'm chirping them, I know it's working. But if they're laughing my face, I was like, yeah, maybe it's not really phasing this guy. But nobody's caught on to that yet. So I will continue.
Ryan, you've likened yourself to a lion in a jungle. Because of that, when you take the ice, do you feel all comers coil to challenge you? Do you feel you always have a target on the back? Are you always aware of that?
You know, the thing that I've tried to establish is that nobody's going to mess with me. And I think I've done a good job. I'm known around the league as somebody that, you know, you don't really mess with. So I wouldn't say I have a target on my back.
So before you go on the ice, when you spray that water in the air, what is going through your mind? What are you telling yourself?
It's hot in that arena. We're in Vegas. It's like 100 degrees here. The arena's hot. I got to cool down a little bit. I got this big mop of hair now. It's hot in there. Like that's what's going through my head.
When you come onto the ice, you've actually been known to attack your own coaches on the bench, playfully.
Oh, man. You know what? It started in St. Louis. Me and Carter Hutton, who was the backup goalie there, we would always yell down the bench at each other. And so when I got traded, I think it started with me and Gilly, our defensive coach. I think he hit me one time and I hit him back. It went from Gilly to the rest of the coaches. Now it's just like every coach and every trainer gets it at some point during the season.
Oh, your goal always to pump up your team by all means necessary. You know the energy you're bringing when you do that, right?
That's part of my game. The physical play, yeah, absolutely. The fear, absolutely. But the energy is a big part of it too. Playing physical, that draws energy. Drawing energy from the crowd, yelling on the bench. I don't play 20 minutes a game. So if I'm sitting on the bench, I don't want to just be sitting there doing nothing. I still got to have an impact on the game. So you can hear me in the stands all game. I'm yelling heads up. I'm yelling time. I'm screaming at guys. That's just my way of trying to have an impact on the game when I'm not on the ice.
Ryan, you defined yourself as one of the toughest forces in the league at the very time the NHL was changing. The players were getting smaller and faster. There was a lot less aggression. The league began to emphasize skill, speed. Was there a moment when you realized, I need to change, I need to adapt to become a different kind of player, one who can keep his gloves on and offer positives to my team?
Right when the lockout happened, the year after that and the year after that, you started seeing players like me that used to only play 4 minutes a night and they go out and try and get, you know, three fights and couldn't really skate, couldn't turn and didn't really have an impact on the game. Those guys started kind of leaving the league. And to me, I just got in the league. I think that was my third year and I didn't want to be a guy that was pushed out because the game was changing. So, you know, where I used to go back home and throw around 400 pounds on the bench press and just try and get big, going away from that. And now I'm, you know, working on my speed to try and keep up with these guys, try and get my hands a little bit better. And let's be honest, I'm not a 50 goal scorer still, but you know, I can still keep up with some of these guys. I've caught some good players before, and I think that's what's been able to keep me in the league.
Then Blues head coach Ken Hitchcock told the press, we looked at it from a career standpoint. Ryan had to become quicker, have more endurance to become a good player. He had to address a lot of things, quite frankly. Now, when I hear those words, that challenge, Ryan, to work on your weaknesses, lesser players, lesser human beings, like me, for instance, they're stung by any criticism. But how did it feel emotionally to hear him say that?
It was just the fact of life. I played with players who dominated the WHL. I played with a guy who led the league in the WHL 1 year. Whether they came up to the AHL or the NHL and their coach said, listen, this is what I need you to be, or you need to adapt to a bigger boy game, and they never did. Well, you know, for me to be one of the guys that has made it from all those teams, it's only because I was willing to adapt. For me, it was simple. I wanted to keep playing as long as I could. I dreamt of this. I didn't want it to end after 3 years. I wanted to keep going as long as my body could possibly do it. And so to do that, I had to adapt. So it wasn't like, oh, I got to do something here. It was, okay, let's get to work and let's stay around.
When I think about this transformation, it's up there with Netflix switching from DVDs to streaming. I mean, you were a player who genuinely only worked out in a boxing ring during the off season, and now you've flung yourself into weight loss, endurance, agility, becoming more explosive, wearing a weighted vest while skating. This is like a Rocky training montage crap here, Ryan. What did it feel like? Was there uncertainty in your mind? Can I do this?
My whole life, people have told me what I can't do. And every time somebody tells me I can't do something, I turn that around to motivation. So I don't think I ever doubted myself. I knew it was going to be hard. And it was going from just getting jacked in the gym to trying to work on my speed. And I'll be honest, when I came to the NHL, the only skating I did was on a beer league team. And I don't know if I should be saying that, but when I made the NHL, that's what I was doing. I was skating with a beer league and I was working out in the gym. That's it. Well, now I had to get a skating coach and work on my speed and my stride and work on some skill. So it was hard work, but it wasn't a hard decision to put in the work, put it that way. I got to say, I'm pretty impressed with your how much you dug deep into this, all this information. Like, you got a lot of info on me right now.
I will say you're amazing story, and it's incredibly inspirational, to be candid. All your hard work paid off. I mean, the impact was amazing. You started to make the highlights for Showtime passes through traffic, a completely different sensation for you to experience. You set up line mates Scotty Upshaw and Carl Brodziak for incredible goals. Yeah. And then you said, I don't know, I must have blacked out when I made that pass.
I blacked out a couple times on the ice, let me be honest with you. A Showtime pass in the NHL is not what I do. It was a Showtime pass for Ryan Reeves. For me, that was far above what my skill level was. But in the NHL, that was just a regular pass.
When I saw that and saw your confidence grow on the ice as a proactive player, Ryan Reeves, carrot as well as stick, I watched that. I was like, oh my God, you are living proof everyone can change in life.
If you're willing to put in the work, anybody can do anything. It's not hard, but some people get so set in their ways and they're so stuck on an idea of what they have to do that they miss the big picture.
The Ryan Reeves experience went next level when you arrived in Las Vegas, February 2018, an expansion team with a roster chock full of reinvented players, fast skating, faster mouthed, embarking together on a darling collective run to a Stanley Cup final in their first year of existence. Ryan, watching you thrive in Vegas, it was like watching the perfect match of player, team, culture, and City.
This is the entertainment capital of the world. And I think I'm a little bit of an entertainer. I'm a little bit out there. I'm not afraid to voice my opinion. The way I play, the grit I bring and the chirping on the ice is part of that entertainment. So yeah, I fit in with this city pretty well.
It was a magical, improbable fairy tale playoff run. And at key times, you stepping up to score big goals. The game winner that sent your team to the Stanley Cup final. A goal in game one of those finals. Your best offensive seasons have come at age 32, 33. You're a bit like George Clooney, Ryan Reeves. You get better with age.
Like a fine wine. That's what I always say. I'm like a fine wine. Hopefully it doesn't spoil it anytime soon, though. I'm hoping it takes me into the 40s.
You've not just evolved on the ice. You've grown into the role of ambassador and leader off it. After the tragic shooting of Jacob Blake last August, you were in the bubble and you stepped up to play a pivotal role amongst the NHL's players as they frame their approach to this historic moment. First of all, were you surprised by the offers of help and support from across the league, allies from all points?
I wouldn't say I was surprised. I think I was just unsure of how exactly it was all going to go down. It went from a lot of anxiety for me because, you know, I'm one of very few Black players in this league, and I didn't know how it was going to be looked at, how the league was going to react, how people were going to react. And I knew there was going to be backlash. There's always going to be backlash for that. There's going to be good and there's going to be bad. I didn't know exactly how it was going to go, but the night before everything happened, and I got zero sleep, not even a couple seconds. I look at my phone the next morning and I had a text from Kevin Shattenkirk out in the East, you know, I played with in St. Louis, really good friends with, saying he wanted to talk. And so I didn't know exactly what he wanted to talk about or say. And he said, you know, what are your thoughts on everything? Do we sit out? Whatever we decide to do, us out in the East support you. And then all of a sudden I go to the locker room and Vancouver Canucks, who we're playing against, they're sitting there waiting for me. And we have a chat there and they say, hey, if you want to sit out and you think that sends the right message, we support you. And so once that morning all unfolded, I was really relieved. I was happy to see how much support there was. And I was proud of all those players. They saw a problem going on, something that doesn't necessarily touch them or something that they haven't necessarily seen in their life. But for them to stand up and recognize that problem, I mean, it was a strong message. And I couldn't have been more proud of every single player that stood up there.
It led to an incredible moment. You, surrounded by dozens of players from a number of teams, announcing the collective decision that the NHL would suspend play temporarily. It was a positive, powerful message and an act which made so many sports fans realise that if a sport like hockey, which is, as you say, predominantly white, can speak up, then we should all ask ourselves the important questions, the hard questions that you are forcing us to grapple with. As you stood there, Ryan, flanked by your fellow players, addressing the nation, what did it feel like in that moment?
It felt like we were starting a good conversation. It was tough because we were in a bubble and it's not like we can go out and do anything. But being locked in the bubble, our platform was we were canceling games, and the best thing that we could do was use that time to talk about it. You know, the worst thing that could have done is we say we cancel games and we sit in our rooms and play video games all day and play cards. That would have been the wrong message, a bad look. I thought that a lot of players, a lot of teams use that time to go in the media and talk about the issues that were ahead of us and use that time for good. And I thought it was used well.
I really admired your line. I'd go to war with these guys. I hate their guts on the ice, but I couldn't be more proud of them.
I stood in front of guys that I was trying to kill on ice, and we put all that aside for something that was bigger than hockey at that time. So it was a powerful moment. I was very proud of, I hate them on the ice, but off the ice, I'll grab a beer with any one of them. Most of them.
Ryan, you were a player who came into the league offering a physical style that was then phased out of modern hockey. Instead of being a dinosaur doomed to extinction, you reinvented yourself as a player who could contribute on the ice. The ability to transform is one of the most difficult human traits. Are you occasionally surprised by the extent of your metamorphosis?
No, not really. I think I've had a clear vision of what I wanted to do my whole life. I don't know what grade I was, but a teacher, we were supposed to write about what we wanted to do when we were older. And I said I wanted to be a football or hockey player. And I remember she gave me the paper back and said, you need to say something more realistic. And I said, well, that is realistic. That's what I want to do. Why is that unrealistic? And said, well, it's hard to do that. Well, yeah, but it's hard to do anything you really want to do. It's hard to be a multi-billion dollar CEO. Anything's hard, but if you want to do it, you got to put the work in. My whole life, I've been working for that and dreaming of that. So why would I throw it away because it was hard?
It's one thing to work hard at it, which you have done. It's another thing to go through the transformation. I mean, you are like a caterpillar emerging from a cocoon as a butterfly who can chirp. And that requires a staggering amount of self-awareness to recognize the need to change. Brian, what advice would you have for people, not just in hockey, but in life, who are afraid of confronting challenge and making that change?
If you're afraid of challenges, then you're not going to get anywhere. Life is full of challenges, full of hurdles, full of people saying that you can't do something. And you need to take all of those into motivation, into positivity. I love my fans. I love my haters more because the people who say I can't do something, I just turn that into motivation. You say I can't make the NHL, watch me make the NHL. You say I'm going to play 1 year, okay, well, I'll show you. You have to embrace the challenges. The challenges are the little things in life that make you grow. If you're not willing to embrace them, then yeah, it's not going to work out for you.
Your success was earned the hard way, realizing that what you were doing was no longer working, digging in, making that change. Is that enough, Ryan, the process of change? Or does it need to be capped with a Stanley Cup?
I've had a successful career, got close, I made it to the finals, and I've been in good playoff runs, but I don't think it's as successful as if I win a Stanley Cup. The dream as a kid is always winning a Stanley Cup, and that's the pinnacle of it. And I signed here because I think this is the best team in the league, and this is the best opportunity to win one. I still believe that. I think we have the best team right now, and I want to win a Stanley Cup for sure before I retire, and I want to win it here. I want to retire here. It would feel a little unfulfilled if I didn't win one.
Ryan Reeves, we wish you glory. We wish you courage.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Ryan Reeves, what a human being. Next up, Sebastian Aho, that young Finn who arrived in Carolina and made an entire city storm surge. Again, if you like this podcast, one favour, please rate, share, subscribe and add a review. It means the world to us, as does our partnership with Jägermeister, that human bolt of emotion in a shot glass. Now go and watch the Ryan Reeves video on NHL.com and Men in Blazers social. It was really the honour of a lifetime to begin work again on these stories. They are magical. To more courage.